I mean, the main thing that's been coming to me is this notion of to whom does it arise. It's very satisfying. It's insightful. It's, I mean, I was thinking about it because there's like truth being in reality. And the being part would be who am I? Being is like, who am I, right? So truth being in reality, they all refer to the same essence. It's just, I feel like, I've been thinking lately that like, the who am I question, or to whom does it arise, or like who is experiencing this, who is aware of this experience or this object, or whatever, feeling, thought, feeling, or sensation, entity, whatever, who is aware of this? I wouldn't want to say any way of looking at it is more fundamental than any other, just because truth is certainly fundamental and so is reality. I'm not denying that. It's just, I think often people may inquire into what is true, but when it comes to inquiring into your own nature, your own self, your own body, mind, emotions, that one considers oneself in an ego-identified state, that if that doesn't get questioned, I hear this a lot with people that teach mindfulness. They'll be like, okay, look at this, look at that, become aware of this, become aware of that. But who's becoming aware of it? That question doesn't get asked. Usually, I would say usually it's not asked. So in that way, it's fundamental, I think, practically speaking, that if you're doing mindfulness, but you assume that you're just the self, which is ego, you'll get some benefit probably, but it won't, I don't know, it's like learning how to sweep dust out of your house or dirt out of your house, but you leave the door open and there's like a storm outside and it keeps getting dirty again. And it like, and if it's bad enough, it'll pile up and you'll be overwhelmed, because the ego is the fundamental issue that we're dealing with. And to at least, like, if you're going to do this work, the work of waking up, not the work of becoming a more, you know, effective manager or something. I mean, that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, if you want to wake up, you have to question the roots of the ego, which are definitely in self. And you can get there by asking what's true. It's just that if you ask what's true, it comes back to you. And if you don't, like if you stop, and I've seen that too, where people are doing, say, the work of Byron Katie, they're asking, is it true, and so on, that as soon as it becomes uncomfortable to the ego, they'll stop. Some people. Or inquiring into reality, like, oh, I, as the self, am going to inquire into what's real. If you want to wake up, you have to ideally start with the foundational idea that you're not you, as you think you are. Mm-hmm. You're the timeless essence of all that is. You're the awareness that is aware of objects, forms that come, change, and so on. But that includes the body, the mind, and the emotions. It includes the self, the person. That's not you, that's basically an object arising within you. You don't have to start with that exactly, but it doesn't really start until you're willing to go there and assume it, kind of like, oh. It's interesting. It's, I don't know, which is harder, assuming that who you are in your essence is divine, in a sense, or facing the falsehood of who you think you are, because they kind of go together. I mean, they do. For me, the hardest, the hardest part is like the parts that feel like you. You have to see, like, there might be shame there. There might be very difficult feelings that for you to face those things consciously would be very painful, perhaps, or very uncomfortable. Like, to admit certain things to yourself or to others, just to be honest about who you are and seeing the falsehood that you've gotten wrapped up in. I just think it helps to start with this notion that it's falsehood all the way down. Like, it's an attachment to a form, and that's what ego is. You know what I mean, though?
It's like the paradox of being nothing in a self sense, but also being everything. It's like divinity and nothingness. Like,
yeah,
it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I mean, I think some teachings, really good ones, will say that the ultimate truth is who you are in your essence. Maybe you haven't realized it yet, but that's a premise. Like, that's, again, you start with that. Or you can, and, you know, I'm saying that I think that's important. But it'd be really easy for that just to get co-opted by the ego, and you're just like, oh, I'm a special muckety-muck. Like, it's not that you're this person in a body, this mortal person in a body who also happens to be, you can't have both. Like,
yeah.
Who you are in your essence is the truth of all. And you won't realize that until you let go of your little fucking scraps of nothing that you call self. But let it go. You know, let it go. The tendencies people want to hold on to self, that's ego again, wants to hold on to self and get the other, and have the, it's perverse. It has to stop because it's like, I mean, I guess it's like, you know, when they say you can't take it with you, like when you physically die, you can't take physical things with you. I think we're at a point where we agree with that. I know in the old days they used to bury kings with, not only with precious objects that they might need in the afterlife, that was the assumption, or stuff like that, but also like the animals and even like slaves and servants, they would kill them and put
their
them
wives.
In. Wives, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's gross. Yeah, of course they were dudes, right? Yeah, you don't get to keep it. It can be very hard. I mean, if we've talked about hoarders, I mean, it's hard to let go. Like, you're not going to have a spacious house until you let go of your garbage. And that clutching tendency is very difficult. You can't have both. And the thing is, here's the thing. So some of these hoarder shows, they try to educate them about hoarding disorder, and they'll get a team to come in and clean their house up. It's really clear, though, that if the hoarding mindset is not transcended, they'll just fill the house back up. So it's like you're not going to realize true spaciousness and functionality until you're really free of that tendency to hoard. And what we tend to do is hoard self.
Memory, opinions, perspectives, that kind of thing.
It's strange, yeah, because the tendency to attach to thoughts creates a sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
So, is the attachment to self, or is the attachment self? Right? Like, is the attachment itself create a sense of self? Like, that's where it comes from. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of both.
It's a verb. It's selfing. You talk about selfing as a verb.
Yeah.
Which is really helpful, I think.
It's just, like I said, this question, to whom does it arise? I like that because there's a part of us, I think, that wants to discuss this philosophically and come to some conclusion, and it doesn't work that way. Mm. All it does is lay, it's like you want to put together your piece of IKEA furniture and you're discussing how that's going to be done. You lay everything out, but at some point you just have to do it, right? You follow the instructions or whatever. You can't just look at it and read it and be like, great, we're done. No. So to ask, to whom does it arise, to practice that is something you do. And then, of course, there's the philosophical game of, well, who does it? You know, no, do it. Just do it. Find out what that is. Do it until you find out who you are, and then ask, then see if you want to ask that question. That very clever little semantic game, you know, like, well, who this, who that? And like, it's really just something that you do, and it's delightful if you practice it like sincerely, you know. There is something about laying oneself down. If you start to intuit into what God is, or the divine, or absolute reality, whatever you want to call that, truth itself, there's a spirit of you call it surrender, I guess. And it's a certain attitude of laying oneself down in a sense in service to the realization of this, of reality itself, you know, and that the teaching is that there's one truth, one reality, one being, and you're that. And to realize that, well, it's the greatest gift you could offer. It's everything. And whoever you feel yourself to be that is still separate from that, like a whole, you know, like feels like, well, I do feel, you know, well, I feel kind of like a separate human and, you know, born and I die and blah, blah. Fine. Right. You start with that. The teaching is that you're going to surrender that and realize this greater reality, but you can't keep that limited sense and wake up. Like, it's going to prevent that. You may have certain intuitions of, again, it's like, you know, a hoarder can perhaps have a cleaner home and start to realize what space is, get rid of some boxes, clear some stuff out, get some help to do that, something, or just get some coaching, get motivated, get some help, clear out the house a little bit. Like, oh, this is nice, but it starts to creep back in. Or like an alcoholic who gets a taste of sobriety, but they haven't really defeated the craving. The alcoholic is really a tendency, like the hoarder or the alcoholic, the addict is a state of mind that has to be, in a sense, broken, has to die. And that's what ego is. It's an attachment. So, I mean, you could keep some of those elements of self and still be attached in that way and real start to intuit into the value of the transcendent, you know, it's not even a feeling. Feelings may arise. It's what might be called a direct intuition, radical intuition. It's not thought or sense experience. It's something else. Realization. So that realization, I think don't the Buddhists call that Satori in Zen? A moment of Satori is like a realization. It's not, in a sense, the final realization of nirvana and, you know, ego death and all that. But it's a hint or a taste or something. And that matters. And that means you lay yourself down even more. because you're like, oh, like you've tasted the wine a little bit and you're like, okay, that's it. Whoever I assume myself to be is in the way, and I'm going to learn how to let that go. And the question, to whom does it arise, is, I think, extremely useful. It's simple. I'm thinking of Ramana Maharshi, who's best known for using it, at least in a modern context. I mean, you can do it really any time. It's a practice. Except for me, you know, I'm looking at a coffee cup and I could say, well, to whom does that arise? And that's actually interesting. It's just the self. If your inquiry or your meditation doesn't get, it's like if I inquire into the cup and then like, who wants the cup? And then at some point you're getting into deeper stuff within yourself about desire and aversion and how it works, craving, attachment, you know, and you're, as awareness itself, becoming aware of these things by practicing, like, to whom does this craving arise? It's very interesting, whatever that craving might be. There's no judgment. I mean, judgment might be there, but to ask to whom does this arise is not a judgy. It's as if to ask, like, well, first of all, what's there and who's aware of it? It's like if you stepped on a thorn or something. And I'm not saying this is the ideal situation to do this, but you could do it. Like, you step on a thorn and you're like, and then you're in pain, and there's the pain, just the pain signal from stepping on the thorn. Then there's the pain of mentally complaining about it, that it shouldn't be happening, as well as maybe a sense of like, oh, I'm such an idiot for doing that, or something's wrong with me because I did something, quote, wrong. That's a judgment. That there's the, like, to whom does that pain arise is a really interesting thing. And yet you may notice, so to whom does the pain arise? Immediately you may become aware of like, oh, it arises to the one who's pissed off or who's feeling shitty. And it'll have a feeling. So there's a feeling there, not just a thought, a feeling. The one that's complaining and feeling bad about itself in relation to the thorn and the stepping part. That is pain. And then what you might call suffering, which is like the mental part of it. Okay, so to whom does that pain arise? Oh, to the one that's pissed off. Then you, it's like your vision then goes to the one that's pissed off because it's closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
It feels closer. It's like in your body. The thorn is outside of you. It actually penetrates the skin, sends a pain signal. You're hurt, and yet there's something about the mental part that's very dear, very close, very intimate in a way. You look at that. So to whom does the pain arise? To the one that's pissed off. Okay, the one, when I say quote unquote, the one who's pissed off, that is a thought, feeling, sensation, experience in that moment. Why? Because it's pissed off. I mean, that's part of it, is there's anger. There's irritation, there's complaining, there's the mental habit of complaining, saying it shouldn't be happening when it obviously is happening, the pain that results from that. So then the question is then obviously, to whom does that arise? And then it's as if that one that's pissed off, that structure, like sometimes I call it putting it on the slab. It's like a scientist putting a specimen on a clear field, looking through a microscope, or putting it in a tray or in a petri dish or something, looking at it. What is it? To whom does this arise? I'm looking at it. The one that's pissed off. That's a little bit more challenging. To whom does that arise? Well, what about the one that's feels bad about being pissed off?
Right.
That's a little more subtle. Like, I might feel like right now, I imagine I'm feeling that in my left shoulder. I don't know why. Kind of trying that on, it's like, yeah, why? It feels like it's in my left shoulder. oh, and whose left shoulder? Then it, to whom does that arise? You become aware of it, and it like recedes in a way to a place where there's basically just pure awareness. And it's
that drilling back,
yeah,
sensation that I've described.
Yeah, and when I say pure awareness, one could think, oh, pure awareness, pure as the driven snow and far above and beyond. Uh-huh. No, that's a judgment. Uh-huh. like a higher grade, like it's just, see, it's tricky.
Right, because who wouldn't want to be pure awareness? So then you're,
well,
but you can't stop.
The presumption is you are that already. So you don't make it happen. You just realize that it's already the case. The one who feels superior or feels special, like, oh, pure awareness, and feel a little attachment to that. Or you feel like, oh, I'm impure. I don't deserve it. That one that's under a rock, you know, Gollum or something or whatever. Oh, I'm aware. To whom does that arise? And when you say, I'm putting it that way, when you say to whom does that arise, it's such a, I want to say neutral, but neutral sounds cold and distant. It's not. It's a good word, but like maybe dispassionate. Consciousness awakens to itself and is satisfied. Now, one might say, well, wait, isn't it already satisfied? Isn't it already? Do this practice, find out what I'm talking about, and then tell me if that question comes up for you. Like the question, who are you, is interesting. If the realization is suchness, or, you know, it's really kind of more of a, like a Advaita Vedanta type technique. If you're abiding in the Atman, the self, they call it the self. I don't like that translation. I like the Buddhist terms like essential nature, the truth of who you are, your true nature. That when you're abiding in that as that, you know, there are people out there who want to play games with this, who learn this. Because it's really simple and kind of easy. Like Jed McKenna, who wrote, what was his first book? Spiritually Incorrect Enlightenment. Was that it?
I think that was his first one.
Yeah, that's the one I like. That. Mm-hmm. But he says something about, he mentions this technique and says, you know, talks about Ramana Maharshi, refers to him, but he says something about how it's an entire teaching that can be written on the inside of a matchbook cover. Yeah, that's pretty simple. Who are you? Who are you? You know, to whom does this experience arise? Who is having this experience? Whatever you want to put it, but who are you is usually how it's phrased. Self-inquiry. Simple. So I think it doesn't require philosophy. You don't have to be well-versed in philosophy to do it. So I think it's attractive to a lot of people. Like if you go online and see, you know, people that are talking about it, writing about it, mm-hmm. forums and different things, videos on YouTube, you know, it can easily turn into a little semantic game that people play. Like, oh, who plays it then? Like, mm-hmm. this is something you do for yourself. It's not something you do as a way to try to control someone else or try to elevate yourself or to act, quote unquote, act spiritual or whatever. That's important. Something you do within yourself, for yourself. I mean, you could be helped by a teacher or by a friend or something, maybe, but maybe if you asked for it and like I'm talking about it, I'm teaching this. I mean, I'm discussing it more than teaching it right now, but I'm not saying anyone should do it unless they want to. it's deeply personal. So, I mean, don't go around. Someone says pass the salt and you say, oh, who is it that wants to pass the salt? You know, it's ridiculous. And I know it's a ridiculous example, but that does happen sometimes. And just don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
The one that wants to appear clever, you know, if that it bothers you. Why else would you do self-inquiry unless you were bothered and not at peace? It's sacred. Like, don't be a dick. You could write that inside a matchbook cover. We have a magnet on the fridge that says that. I mean, yeah, don't be a dick. Do the work, self-inquiry. If you're having a peaceful experience, you don't really need to do this. You could, but there's the question to him, does this arise, the thing that arises usually is something problematic and something you're upset about. Otherwise, why do it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could play around with it, but like start with the stuff that's really bothering you. Little habits you notice. See, when I say habits you notice, some may ask, well, wait, who's noticing it? First of all, don't do that to anyone else as a way to try to be clever or get one up on someone or anything. But it is a good point as awareness. So your nature is pure awareness, so that's the one that notices. It's just, it gets tangled up with, or at least apparently, not truly, but apparently gets tangled up with ego.
The noticing is not ego, right? When the noticing comes in, there's an element that breaks up that ego. Or wouldn't you say the noticing itself is a form of letting it go or laying it down?
Well, it depends. I mean, we all notice. We talk a lot about consciousness, and that's really what noticing is consciousness or awareness. No one is utterly unconscious. There's no, I mean, even criminals and dictators and evil people have some consciousness. They can notice things. It's just how deeply does that penetrate? Like whom does it serve? If
mm-hmm.
it's a self-defeating proposition, like hoarding's a disorder and people die from it sometimes. Certainly die from addiction to drugs and alcohol. But people die from gambling addictions, you know, or even codependency and things. We're all given the tools we need to wake up, but we squander them often. You could give someone $1 million, and if they go into a casino and they're a gambling addict, it's not going to last much longer. You know, even if they win some, over time, you know, you'll lose it. So the noticing, I mean, it's a really interesting point. I mean, ego is sort of like a damper on it, and it's pretty powerful. Like, let's say there's some kind of brutal warlord somewhere in some country, just hypothetically, torturing children, doing horrible things, and just generally being a dick in a big way, right? Let's say he robs people. He's hoarding in his own way, raiding villages, stealing anything of value, you know, and over time he may become wealthy in a certain sense, or relatively speaking. And he'll notice that, like his bank account, whatever, that is, who's in charge, but there's going to be paranoia. There's going to be tremendous fear of loss, anger, you know, what the Buddhists call defilements that just kill your happiness. Like, you're not going to be happy. You may have moments of pleasure. Someone like that probably has to use some kind of substance. But I usually say coke and whores, because that is kind of what happens. The cocaine, it's dopamine. They just want to feel good. So there is awareness there. It's just limited. And it's put in service to ego.
Mm-hmm.
It's an illusion that it could ever really serve ego, but it's a gift. Like, we're given that. And then we squander it. And only too late realize, if we're lucky, we realize, you know, that the error of our ways. Yeah. Like, usually when, you know, someone who, like, conventionally, if someone says, okay, I want you to become aware of blank, some object, a thought, a feeling, or a sensation, physical object, something. The assumption is usually you, as a physical person in a body, become aware. And that's a big part of the illusion, is just that somehow that consciousness arises from mental activity. And it's not true. And you have to figure that out for yourself. And anyone who might be hearing this, just look up The Hard Problem of Consciousness, David Chalmers. There is no evidence that there's anything more than a correlation of states of consciousness with the brain. There's no real evidence that the brain produces consciousness. They just don't know how that, I mean, no one's proven that yet. I'm just saying that consciousness is fundamental, and that the thoughts arise within consciousness, and that consciousness survives what we call death, and waking up to it is satisfying and basically happy because it's the fundamental reality. But yeah, I mean, if say you go to see a therapist or something, and it's okay, what are you feeling? But become aware of your, or maybe you're doing a breathing exercise, you know, become aware of the sensation of your breath, or, you know, that's an exercise of awareness, and it is a noticing, and it's really important not to pat each other on the back too much, or ourselves, or whatever. Like, if you're a hoarder, literally, you have to break the spell of this hoarding addiction, this problem. And it doesn't matter if you might have a great day where you get a bunch of stuff cleared out. It will fill back up again and it can kill you. And it's sort of like saying, well, even hoarders have space. I mean, there's some space, or you can't live. Why are we even talking about that? Break the addiction to boxes and garbage, and then clear it out, and it won't fill up again. And then you could be happy and functional.
Mm.
So if it's like the question, your question was something like, if someone says, okay, just notice this thing, what was the question? Like, there's a good distinction you were making there about.
Well, noticing is not ego. It's like a different element. But you're saying,
it's like saying space is not hoarding.
What I'm hearing you say is that in an egoic sense, we can certainly notice all kinds of things and manipulate and plan and scheme based on what we notice as an ego. But the noticing you're talking about is a higher form that is not ego, and it actually breaks ego down.
The space, here's the thing, the space in a hoarder's home. And the thing is, in some real sense, if you think about it, If you have a hoarded home that's full of stuff, you could say there's not much space. That's true. But only functionally, because the space is there whether they're filling it up or not. Like, the space is there. It's just full of junk. You haven't, have you harmed the space? I'm talking about space itself. I'm not talking about the functional part of it is completely fucked up and not healthy, right? The actual situation is there's just as much space whether your house is hoarded or not.
Right.
But you haven't realized it. And that if someone helps you clear out some of it, you start to, in a sense, realize what space is a little bit. You won't realize the fullness of it until you break that addiction or that habit, that spell. It's like the hoarding tendency. So ego is like a hoarding tendency or an addiction, an attachment that creates a sense of self that we cherish until we don't. So the question of like awareness, is the awareness of just noticing with ego in place to whatever degree, is that like the warlord that notices what his bank account is doing or something? Yeah, he's noticing that. There's enough clarity, and it's a gift, even that your mind works at all, that you could look at a bank account and see numbers and understand them. That's a gift. Just like a hoarded house, whatever space is there that you can function and look around and, oh, well, I've got this thing and that thing and, you know, feel good about yourself. I would say you're fortunate in that sense because it's like you have the ability, you still have the ability to do that. And you could say, yeah, this space in a hoarded house is the same as the space in a non-hoarded house. But if you haven't realized it yet, who gives a shit? So the question of like, is the noticing that one might do conventionally the same as the noticing that occurs in an awakened condition? Is it the same? I mean, yes and no. Ultimately the same, yes. Functionally, not at all. As long as that addict is still functioning, running or dysfunctioning, you know, it's as long as that attachment, that craving, that's the cause, that as long as the cause is still in place, there's still work to do, you know? And it's pretty similar to the hoarded house situation, pretty similar.
That so there's noticing in an egoic conventional sense, but then there's noticing as a practice that is...
You almost would call noticing like, it's weird, you would call it awareness of space. There's awareness of things, but you have to be separate from something to see it. You have to have a space to see it in. Just like a scientist has to have a clear, you know, a work area where she can view things, you know. And yeah, a hoarded house, like if you have a huge pile of things, it's hard to see specific things in that pile. And that's similar to a mental state where you're so full of ideas, thoughts and beliefs and memories and projections and all that you can't, it's hard to be clear in that. It's harder. You can do it. It's really a functional situation. Meaning there's more or less function, more or less suffering. And dysfunction is suffering. It causes a feeling of a state of feeling of lack and unhappiness.
Well, and that's another way that ego stays intact is by having problems and a sense of lack and a ennui and that low level of.
That's why this question, coming back to the original one, so the question is noticing the same? Well, it's a functional issue. So the first question is, the most effective one is, okay, well, what are you noticing now? And to whom does that arise? You know, that's really where that's what it is, because... And I've seen these shows where a good therapist, a good you know, they have these like organizing specialists, and some of them are psychologists. You know, there is some psychology in there, but they have a way of doing it where they'll pick up an item off the hoard and say, they don't say to whom does this arise. They're taking it out of the hoard and holding it up by itself. Like, see this? Like, do you notice this?
Yeah.
And they'll say, what are you feeling right now? Well, they usually say, okay, see this? I'm going to take this with me, and you're not going to know what I'm going to do with it. I might keep it. I might give it away. I might throw it away. I might burn it. You don't know. How does that feel when you think about that? And that's kind of a way of saying, to whom does that like, there's an object, but there's all these associations with it. Mm-hmm. It brings up your cravings, your desires, your attachments. And that, it's similar. It's just, what I'm suggesting is like, you know, the one that's desirous or craving and doesn't want to let this thing go and feels troubled by that, that's also an object, not just the physical thing. Like on the show, it's usually like a doll from some time in the past that they're, you know, maybe a collectible item that they're attached to. And that it'll bring up a feeling like, okay, so maybe notice what you're feeling. That's a way of like, it's like you're turning your head towards something and then you take it out and look at it, kind of like, mm-hmm. It's mental and emotional. It's not physical. You may feel it in your body, almost like a physical sensation, but mentally generated. To say to whom does that arise is a deeper practice. Mm-hmm. And then it regresses in a way. You're isolating. It could be put this way. You're isolating the subjective element. The subjective element being awareness, the I am awareness, the awareness that you are. And purifying it, functionally speaking. Because remember, in an absolute sense, it's there whether you fill it up with crap or not. But you haven't realized it, so you're not happy. Because you haven't realized it. The realization is like, to whom does this arise? It starts to purify and clarify your awareness, and you'll start seeing how these defilements operate. Desires, cravings, fear, sadness, like attachment. And the witnessing, the more pure the awareness becomes, the more it'll see what's there. And in a sense, it's like seeing what to do with it, with that attachment, including the attachments. See, those start to let go too. Because a hoarder it's important for a hoarder not just to get rid of the physical things, but to get rid of the mental attachments as well. And little by little, we start to become happy for no reason, because we're starting to realize who we are. We're behaving as a realized person would behave to some degree, to a degree that we start to become aware of that. Like, wow, I want more of that. So you continue to practice. And then, yeah, who practices? Well, the practice is there's some kind of suffering going on in you. The question, you know, when you ask to whom does that suffering arise, it requires a certain awareness to do that. And it becomes clearer. And at some point it breaks, like an addict, like you just lose your desire for whatever drink or drug or behavior. You're like, yeah, I don't need all this stuff. And you start getting rid of it. And then you'll keep some of it. Why? Because it's functional. Then life becomes about function, not about identity. Mm. If we attribute identity to things, and that's a mistake, basically. Mm. I mean, when it comes down to it, who you are is free of that. Just like space is free of all those boxes. It doesn't need it. It's an illusion. It causes suffering. And so, I mean, do it if you want to do it. Do it if you're experiencing suffering and want to just be more free of it. And I'm saying you could utterly be free of it. Because you realize, it's like realizing space. See, it's already free. It already is what it is. You are that already. It's worth it.